Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I am your host, Paul Gannon. For the next hour and a half, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. And you can send messages to the show on Twitter, at GoForItGan. And while you're there on Twitter, give me a follow, at GoForItGan, and I might even follow back. Great show lined up for you today. Expected to be joined by Indiana Pacers guard slash forward Paul George. And Paul's going to talk about his upcoming skills camp, which takes place in California. And we're going to talk to Paul about that and his offseason as well as he prepares for the next season. And Paul George had a good season for the Indiana Pacers. Indiana Pacers as a whole had a fairly good season, and this is a team that was fairly dominant at points of the season, and this is a team that gave the Miami Heat all they could handle in the opening round. In the second round, I should say, took them to six games, and at one point was up on the Heat 2-1 in the Eastern Conference semifinals. So Indiana Pacers team is a team that has brought back a lot of their key guys. This team that kept this team, they kept this team together. You thought possibly Roy Hibbert would go after the Blazers gave him a max deal, but Roy Hibbert stuck around, and as a whole, this Pacers team has stuck around, and they are together. But we'll see what happens going into the season, but we're going to talk to Paul George about that. And I want to start now. Pro football training camps are opening up throughout the league, and if you ain't know any better, you would have thought or only think that training camps only opened in New York with the Jets and in Denver with the Broncos. I mean, these are really the only two camps that are getting big-time attention right now, and we all know why in Denver, Peyton Manning, and we also know why in New York with the Jets, Cortland, New York to be exact. It's Tim Tebow. And the thing about it is, have we ever seen so much fanfare for a backup quarterback? And granted, the backup quarterback sometimes is always the most popular player on a team with the fans. Because the starter is not doing well, we all want the backup. The starter's stinking up to join, I want the backup. Let me get the backup in. Maybe let's start chanting his name, Tebow. Let's get him in there. And this guy, it's not, and I don't think it's him per se, but I do think it's his. It's the people who come with Tim Tebow. It's the cult following, if you will, that he has, where he goes, wherever he goes. It was in Florida, it was this way, and Denver, it was this way, and now with the Jets, it's this way. I mean, we can't keep his name out of our mouths. I mean, we constantly have this man's name in our mouths. And have we ever seen such a thing? A guy who completed only 46% of his passes, a guy who one particular game only had two completions, a guy on numerous occasions who you just wonder how this guy is a quarterback in the National Football League. I mean, have we ever seen so much fanfare for a quarterback who skill set is limited in a lot of ways at this point in his career? Now, I'm not saying Tim Tebow couldn't get better. He can get better. He definitely can get better. How much better? I don't know. I don't know how much better Tim Tebow actually can be. Is this his ceiling? What we saw last year. And what we saw last year was a guy who was able to come in and, in a lot of ways, saved the day for the Denver Broncos. We can't take that away from Tim Tebow. He saved the day for the Denver Broncos. He saved the day. He came in when the team was down and out. He came in when the Broncos were flat out struggling. They were struggling. And Tim Tebow, he came in and he saved the day. He saved the day for the Denver Broncos. He saved the day. There's no getting around that. If Tebow doesn't come in, the Broncos probably don't make the playoffs. I mean, they were stinking up the joint with Kyle Orton as the quarterback. And Tebow, with the help of his defense, his magic was great. I mean, the Tebow magic was incredible. You look at many of the game against the Dolphins, where it looked like the Broncos were out of it, and he comes back and they get the victory. I mean, that Jets game where he drove 92 yards, the Chargers, the Viking game, the Bear game. I mean, the list goes on and on. Well, not on and on, because that's it. But you look at it, and this guy, when the chips were down and when it was time to get it done, he got it done. He got it done. Now, you can look at some games. I mean, 2 for 8, I should say, against the Kansas City Chiefs. An NFL quarterback throwing the ball only 8 times in a game. That's crazy. But one of those completions was a long completion, 56 yards, to Aaron Decker. But you look at it, even the last game of the season against the Chiefs, 6 for 22, and that's the regular season, 6 for 22, a rating of 20.6 in that particular ballgame. 6 for 22. I mean, the numbers that this guy has thrown up in games is just amazing. You've never seen a quarterback with such awful stat lines. 2 for 8. Awful stat line. Awful stat line. I mean, and at the end of the day, he completed only 46% of his passes. But without Tebow, without the help of that defense, I mean, that Broncos defense was great last season for the Denver Broncos. The Denver Broncos do not get to where they got without that defense. That defense was big for them. That defense was very big. But it seemed like, and I don't know if it was a coincidence, but it seemed like the Denver Broncos, when Tim Tebow came in as a starting quarterback, It just seemed like the Denver Broncos were a completely different team, played with a completely different energy. It was just a different energy with the Denver Broncos. But I look at Tebow and I look at some of the games where he lost, and I think if you get him in games where he's going to have to score a lot of points, you're in trouble. I mean, when they played the Lions that one game, they lost 45-10. They lost 45-10. And when Tebow had to score and throw the football a lot, you saw his limitations. You see his limitations. Even against the Patriots, both times, you saw his limitations. When he goes up against a team that's going to score a lot of points, you're not going to be confident having Tim Tebow in a shootout. You're just not. You're not going to be confident with Tim Tebow in a shootout. You're not. A lot of limitations in his game. A lot of limitations. But a lot of things you can't take away from. And there's some things you can't take away from this guy. You can't take away from what happened in the regular season and how the Denver Broncos became a different team and how they got into the playoffs and won the division ultimately. You cannot take away what he did in the playoffs against the Pittsburgh Steelers, 10 for 21, 316 big yards, including the game winner in overtime to Demaryius Thomas. That was a perfect pass, by the way. You can't take that away from Tim Tebow. But the thing about him, and it can be very sickening at times to see all this attention given to this guy who, in a lot of ways, is a marginal quarterback, an average to below-average quarterback. Average, I think, is his ceiling. Now, granted, it seems like he's willing to do the work to get better, working with various experts to help his mechanics, help his throwing motion, work with Tom House recently to work on his throwing motion. I mean, he's doing the things to get himself better. He's putting in the work and doing the things to get himself better. He's doing that. And so you can't take away, you know he's going to work hard because he's shown it. But the thing about it is, this guy is an average quarterback, average to below average quarterback. And you look at Tim Tebow and you say to yourself, what is the big deal? And the big deal, it comes down to his faith. I mean, he's a devout Christian, and he'll let you know it. He'll let you know it. I mean, and I guess there seems to be an energy around this particular guy. All he did last year was win. And had some horrible stat lines along the way, but all he did was win. And if you're a Denver Broncos fan, I don't think you can really argue with what you saw last season. I mean, you really can't. But the thing about it is, you had an opportunity at Peyton Manning. So when you have an opportunity at Peyton Manning, guess what? You got to get Peyton Manning. I mean, there's no getting around that. If you have an opportunity at Peyton Manning, you have to get Peyton Manning, and that's what the Denver Broncos did. And the Denver Broncos knew the limitations of Tim Tebow. They didn't get caught up. It was fool's gold in my mind, I think, with Tim Tebow, to think that you can get back to the playoffs with a quarterback like that. And his coach even said, his old coach John Fox said it. He said it. If Tim Tebow had to run a pro-style offense, he would be screwed. And you know who else would have been screwed? The Denver Broncos. They would have been screwed last year. But they were 1-4 and absolutely positively left for dead. Left for dead. Left for dead. And Tebow, he got the victories, but the last three games of the regular season, he wasn't very sharp. He was awful. Buffalo against the Patriots, he was okay. He had some moments on the ground as well. But against the Bills and against the Chiefs, the last two games of the regular season, and the Chiefs game, that was theoretically with the division on the line. Luckily for the Broncos, the Raiders lost. Luckily for the Broncos, the Raiders lost. But Tim Tebow, I just don't understand it. I understand it. I get it. It's just, and I'm looking at ESPN.com today, and headline, front page of ESPN.com, Tim Tebow dominates at goal line. So Tim Tebow, him dominating in the goal line offense is front and center on ESPN.com. That shows you something, that a guy who is a Wildcat backup quarterback, who is essentially, I guess you can argue, maybe Jeff Hostetler in his early days. You remember Jeff Hostetler for the Giants? He did a lot of things on special teams and things of that nature. Tim Tebow is basically Cordell Stewart in his year with the Steelers that one year when they went to the Super Bowl, 96. Where he was slash, he did it all. That's basically what Tim Tebow is. He's slash. But if you ask me skill set wise, who would I rather have, Cordell Stewart or Tim Tebow? I think it's a very simple answer. Cordell Stewart was the more talented quarterback than Tim Tebow. Cordell Stewart took his team to the AFC title game. That being the Pittsburgh Steelers. So Cordell Stewart, to me, is a more talented version of Tim Tebow. But Tim Tebow may, upstairs, in terms of his head, would you maybe favor Tebow? Probably. Probably. But in terms of skill set, in terms of just flat-out ability, Tim Tebow is, Cordell Stewart is the guy I would favor. And I'm just talking in terms of flat-out ability. I would favor Tim Tebow. Not Tim Tebow. I keep saying Tim Tebow. I would favor Cordell Stewart. Cordell Stewart is the more talented athlete. than Tim Tebow. But it's just this Tebow phenomenon. It's just crazy. It's just crazy. I mean, everybody was talking. He was running with his shirt off. Running with his shirt off, and that got big-time news. Running in the rain with his shirt off. And everyone's talking about that. I mean, everything he does, we talk about. Tim Tebow farts. Oh, I heard Tim Tebow fart in a restaurant. I mean, that didn't happen. But those are the type of things that we would hear if it did happen. I mean, it's just silliness. We have to remember he is a backup quarterback in this league. He is a backup. He is a backup quarterback. And so much fanfare given to a backup quarterback. It's just amazing. Just absolutely amazing. And let's move around the NFL. And Ben Roethlisberger, he revealed on Wednesday that he had a slight tear in his right rotator cuff. And that happened during a game last November. But as is looking now in Steelers camp today, no really concerns. Teammates say Big Ben is fine, and maybe it's just nothing. And Big Ben is a tough guy. He's a tough, tough quarterback. There's no getting around that. This guy plays with numerous injuries week in and week out, year in and year out, and he still gets it done. And you look at the Steelers, and I was I actually predicted that the Steelers would lose to the Broncos and Tim Tebow last year. And one of the reasons I predicted it was, it wasn't, and I thought the Steelers were the better team. Still think the Steelers are the better team. Last season, that is. I thought the Steelers were the better team. But what it came down to me, was Big Ben not being healthy. And he really was not healthy in that particular ball game. And I thought that was the equalizer, and that kind of evened the score a little bit. Also, not having Ryan Clark hurt the Steelers in that particular ball game. And Tim Tebow played out of his mind in that game, and therefore, with all that put together, the Steelers lost in that game. But Big Ben's a big part of what the Steelers do, and I believe they need him to be healthy, if they want to make a run at the Super Bowl. They need him to be healthy. They need him to be on top of his game. And all reports are Ben looked fine in camp, and basically, Big Ben was quoted as saying, it's one of those where the doctor says, you know what, let's just avoid throwing too much in the walkthroughs, and we don't have to throw, and try not to land on it. And so basically, he's saying he's not going to be throwing a lot when he doesn't have to throw, and also try not to land on it. And that's part, the second part, that may be a little difficult as an NFL quarterback. Try not to land on that shoulder. Maybe he shouldn't have revealed it because now teams may target that shoulder. But, I mean, the doctors are telling him to try not to land on that shoulder. Okay, that might be a little difficult as a starting NFL quarterback in this league. As a starting NFL quarterback, that may be pretty difficult not to fall on that particular shoulder. That might be difficult. It might be difficult. So, I mean, that's what Big Ben has to do. But the Steelers, in my mind, have no shot of getting to a Super Bowl. They need him to be Big Ben for them to get to a Super Bowl. They have no shot to go to the Super Bowl without a healthy Big Ben. It's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. It's not. So, if you're a Steelers fan, hopefully Big Ben we'll be fine. Hopefully. Hopefully. But we shall see. And now you're going around the league, and Roger Goodell and Damaris Smith, they talked today. Been talking about some of the arrests that have been happening this offseason in the NFL. Guys getting in trouble. I mean, there have been over 30 arrests, active NFL players. And this is involving alcohol or drugs. This is involving alcohol or drugs. And let's be honest. I mean, you're a person of a certain age. You're young. You got a lot of money. With that, being young, with having a lot of money, is partying and enjoying the fruits of your labor. But I talked about this at length last week with Jason Kidd, with all these other guys. You got to be smart. If you're going to drink, you're going to drink. That's cool, whatever. But please, get drivers, get all those things. I talked about it at length last week. I don't need to reiterate it. They know what they need to do. I don't really know what can be done to limit these type of things. I almost think it comes with the territory of being young and rich, young, rich, and famous. Being young, rich, and famous is a lot of responsibility. And when you're young, a lot of times you can't handle certain responsibilities. You have a hard time handling responsibility. And that's a part of being young, rich, and famous. Not being able to handle the responsibilities. It's tough. I don't know if I could have acted right with millions of dollars in my pockets. But to whom much is given, much is expected. And I think that's what we see here. But at the same time, even with all that being said, it sometimes doesn't even matter. When you're young, a lot of times you're naive. With naivete comes bad decision-making. With bad decision-making comes arrest. Becomes a loss of money, loss of freedom in terms of probation, jail, and even loss of game money with suspensions, possible suspensions. So being young, rich, and famous, it comes with a lot of responsibilities. And some guys are just not equipped, at least not right away, to handle it. You're coming from various situations. Maybe daddy wasn't in the house. And you're being raised by a single parent, and shout out to all the single parents who go out there and try to do the best they can. But there's a lot of times you cannot fill the void of not having a father. Those are some things that you just cannot fill. There's some voids you can't fill, and sometimes you can't fill that void. And so a lot of times the responsibility of helping the kids and raising the kids may fall on an older sibling. With all that being said, they're not getting the knowledge that maybe a person would get with two parents. They're not getting the necessary knowledge that they may need to be successful and may not learn certain things until they get a certain age. And then when they're at that certain age, unfortunately, sometimes when you get to that certain age, there's going to be a lot of bumps and bruises. You're going to take a lot on the chin. You're going to slip up. You're going to trip. You're going to fall many times. Many times you're going to fall. You're going to fall. And again, just because daddy wasn't around, or just because mommy wasn't around either, just because those things are happening does not give you an excuse to not act right. It's not an excuse. It's not an excuse. You need to act right. At a certain age, you got to learn how to act right. And again, to whom much is given, much is expected. And that's life, folks. That is life. Fair or unfair, it's life. It is what it is. It is what it is. It's life. To whom much is given, much is expected. So deal with it, but you got to act right. You got to act right. It's no excuse, especially DUIs. It's just no excuse for you to get caught up with that. That's just no excuse. It's no excuse. It's just flat out no excuse, especially with the type of money that you're making. It's not an excuse in the world. Any excuse you give, I'm not buying. I'll say, okay, yeah, right, cool. Okay, yeah, right, cool. Okay, yeah, right, cool. Whatever. But guess what? Get it right, man. Football players, athletes in general, get this thing right. Don't get caught up in the nonsense that's out there. Especially things that you can avoid. Especially things, so many things in life that you really don't have control of. But the things that you do have control of, take advantage of the things that you have control of. You can control how much you drink. Unless you're an alcoholic, then you may have another problem. That's another issue for another time. But you can control whether or not you get a designated driver. That you can control. You can control whether or not you get a car service. That is what you can control. You can control your actions. You can't control anybody else's actions, but you can't control your actions. On a football field, you can't control what the offensive lineman's doing as a running back, as a quarterback. You can't control that. But you got to do your job. And part of doing your job as an NFL player, as an athlete in general, is acting right. That's a part of your job. That's a part of your job. That's a part of the shield. Act right. Act right. That's all I'm saying. Act right. You can only control so many things in life. But the things that you can control, control them, please. I mean, it makes no sense that Roger Goodell and Damaris Smith, the head of the Players Union, it doesn't make sense that they have to have a meeting like they're having. That doesn't make sense. I mean, that's not necessary. It's ridiculous that they have to have that type of meeting. It really is in my mind. Because you need to learn how to act right. And hopefully, the rookie symposium that happened about a month ago now, hopefully some of these new guys took heed to what was said in those meetings. In those seminars, Michael Vick spoke and talked about his situation. Michael Irvin talked about his situation. And these were guys who got themselves in trouble throughout the course of their NFL career. They got themselves in trouble. And so hopefully players, the young players, can learn from the Michael Vicks and the Michael Irvings of the world. Learn from those guys. Because those guys have been where a lot of these players are at. And those guys have been at the top, and those guys have been at the bottom. I mean, Michael Vick pretty much went broke because of his dealings in dogfighting. I mean, it was just, you look at it and you hear a story like that, and it's just ridiculous, asinine to hear such a thing. It's asinine. It's just asinine to hear that. Asinine to hear that. But it is what it is. It is what it is. But hopefully guys can learn from some of the things that they're doing and just try to do better. And that's all you can ask from people. Just do better. Do better. We all have to do better in all walks of life. And hopefully guys will try to do better. In the NFL, Commissioner Roger Goodell is not playing. If you don't do better, you're going to pay. I mean, you're going to lose. You're going to pay with loss of game checks and suspensions. You're going to not only hurt yourself by losing money, losing games, but you're going to hurt your team by losing those games and not playing in those games and not being a key contributor in those games. You can't beat none of those things in today's NFL if you don't act right. And that's really the bottom line. Roger Goodell does not play. He just does not play. So it's very important that you're on top of your game, not only on the field, but off the field as well. You have to be on top of your game. If you're not on top of your game, guess what? If you're not on top of your game off the field, guess what? You're going to miss time. And it's really that simple. It really doesn't get any simpler than that. It's that simplistic. Get it right. Get it right. Please, players, get it right. Very important. Very, very important. And I have to throw this final thing in. Especially if you're going to be drinking a lot, don't drive. Don't drive. Please don't drive. Please get a designated driver. Please get a car service. Please get something. But whatever you do, don't be a fool. Do not be a fool. And we'll leave it at that. We'll leave it at that. I want to move now to the Olympics, and I want to move to the basketball, this version, I guess, of the Dream Team, if you want to call them that. But anyway, they're playing now, and they're getting it done. They're balling, and they scored 156 points. 156 points. And we'll talk about that a little later. You're listening to Go For It on Blog Talk Radio. And let's come back now. And like I said, I mean, you look at this version of the Dream Team, if you will, they scored so many points today. 156 points against Nigeria. Granted, it's Nigeria. So that helps. It helps that they're playing Nigeria. But 156 points, still 156 points. I mean, and that's Olympic record. I don't care who you're playing. I don't care if you're playing the Little Sisters of the Poor. I don't care if you're playing 5-year-olds. I mean, 156 points is 156 points. And you could say, yeah, they're playing Nigeria, but they're playing Nigeria. 156 points is 156 points. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. That's a lot of points. That's a lot of points. I don't care what anybody says. 156 points is a lot of points. And that's what the U.S. team scored today, including a record 78 points in the first half. A record 78 points in the first half. That's balling. That's getting it done. And that's what the U.S. team did today. You're listening to Go For It on blogtalkradio.com.
Corey Almeida, a.k.a. Corey Live, host of Picturica on the Hub and warm-up host for American Idol and Dancing with the Stars. And right now, you are listening to Go For It on Blog Talk Radio with my man, Pauly G.
And we're back, and we're going to be joined now by Indiana Pacers guard Paul George. He has a great skills camp coming up now, and he had a great year for the Indiana Pacers. The Indiana Pacers as a whole had a great season. They got very far this year, got to the second round and gave the Miami Heat all they could handle. I mean, they were up 2-1 in the Eastern Conference semifinals, up 2-1. The Pacers were in prime position to win that particular series, the Miami Heat ultimately took it over. But the Pacers are a team on the rise. And one of the reasons they're on the rise is this man right here. Let's bring him in now. Guard, forward for the Indiana Pacers, the one, the only, Paul George. Paul, how are you, sir?
How you doing? What's up?
How are you? You're a PG. I'm a PG.
Oh, how you doing?
I'm all right. We got the PGs here tonight, everybody. And, Paul, let's look at it. I mean, you got to the second round, gave the Heat a very tough season. How much confidence does that give you guys going into next season?
Oh, it gives us a lot of confidence, especially with, you know, ourselves bringing You know, still keeping the core in our starting five, and you know, adding you know key pieces like DJ Augustine and Gerald Green to a pretty explosive team already. So, I mean, we're ready. We're excited. We feel good. You know, for this next coming year, and you know, I think we grew a lot. You know, throughout that whole playoff series.
And one of the reasons you guys grew was head coach Frank Vogel last year. He was the interim coach this year, his first full season with you guys. A very good young coach. Talk about playing for Frank Vogel.
I mean, it's amazing. You know, Coach Vogel does a great job of preparing us every game. I mean, it's real easy to work for him and play for him. You know, his only thing is just play hard. And, you know, we preached all year to play together. And, you know, that's the reason why we've done so well, because we did play together as a unit. So, you know, I think, you know, if anybody was, you know, in control of our team, we wouldn't have been, you know, so successful.
And, Paul, this offseason, some tense moments for you guys. Your all-star center, Roy Hibbert, he signed a max deal with the Blazers. Ultimately, the Pacers would match. But were you concerned at any point about the possibilities of losing Hibbert?
Yeah, Hibbert, I mean, he's kind of our cornerstone. I mean, if he's our backbone to our defense. You know, he does an amazing job of holding down the paint. And, I mean, just his presence out there, whether it's offensively or defensively, I mean, he has a way of impacting and controlling the game, you know, that a lot of bigs in this league can't do. And, I mean, it would have been a big loss and a setback. And a step back if we would have lost him.
We're talking to Indiana Pacers guard Paul George. And, Paul, you improved on many parts of your game last season, as the numbers showed it. Your big improvement was from downtown three-point land. You went from 29% as a rookie up to 38%. What made your jump shot better in 2012?
I mean, just, you know, the lockout and everything going on. You know, there was a lot of time for me to shoot and two shots up. You know, so I think that really played a big part. But the main reason was, I mean, I was able, you know, when you got guys like Roy Hibbert, David West, Danny Green, you know, three guys that have been all stars, you know, that kind of opens up the floor for you. And a lot of the shots, you know, was, you know, I had to knock down.
And you knocked it down this year for the Indiana Pacers. And like we said, you improved on many parts of your game. You tweeted the other day, my year. What does Paul George need to improve on going into next season to make next season your year?
Just the aggressiveness. You know, the game that you guys will see this coming year is the game I always had. It's just, you know, I just feel like it's my year, you know, for me to come out and, you know, for me to really show the tools and the reason why the Pacers drafted me with the 10th pick.
Right, right. And you improved from your rookie year to your second season, and let's see if you can make that improvement from the second season to the third season. Let's talk about you guys now, the Eastern Conference contenders. When we talk about Eastern Conference contenders, you hear the Heat, you hear the Bulls, you hear the Celtics, and you even hear the Brooklyn Nets after some of the moves that they made this offseason. Based on what has transpired this offseason, can we put the Pacers in that group?
Yeah, you can. You definitely can. I think the way we carried ourselves and the way we played, you know, throughout the whole year this past season, you know, definitely opened eyes. You know, you talk about us now, we got about 7 national games. Yeah, that's big, you know, going
right.
1 last year. So we're making a push. You know, we're getting up there nationally. You know, our fan base has been incredible. So I think we're no longer the team that flying under the radar. You know, we're the team that now, I mean, I guess we have to, you know, hold up to everything that we build it up.
Right. And we look at you guys, and let's look at the Olympics right now, this version of the Dream Team, if you will. I guess you can call them that. But, I mean, how much, looking at it for you, how much would playing in the Olympics and representing your country mean to you?
It means a lot. I mean, it definitely means a lot. You know, those guys, you know, really have to sacrifice a lot. Same as, you know, our troops that go over there and fight for our country. You know, those guys are primarily going over there to fight for our country, you know, just doing it in a different way. So, The chance to represent your country as a whole is, you know, that's a lifetime achievement.
And how much would it mean to you to get on that team possibly in 2016?
I mean, I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully I can, you know, make that roster.
Right.
You know, the select team that we had, you know, was a lot of fun to play with those guys. So if that can be our roster for, you know, 2016, I'll be happy.
We're talking to Indiana Pacers guard Paul George. And, Paul, I need you to settle a dispute right now. The original Dream Team or this version? Who would win in a game?
You got to go with the Dream Team. It'll be a fun game, but yeah, you can't doubt MJ.
Definitely. And those bigs, I mean, Patrick Ewing, David Robinson, Karl Malone, I mean, you're talking about those guys in their prime.
Exactly. And
that's where they would have the advantage down low, I think. But it would, like you said, it would be a great, great game. And, Paul, you showed a lot of skills this season, and and that should help you definitely as you host your second annual skills camp in Sun Valley, California. Tell us a little bit about this camp.
Yeah, my camp, you know, this is my second year doing it. It'll be at Village Christian High School starting August 7th through the 9th, ages 7 through 16. And, I mean, you know, for the people that showed up last year, I mean, we had an amazing time. You know, I brought in guests for, you know, the kids to see. And, I mean, we just had fun. You know, we played a lot of games. We really broke down the basics of basketball. And, you know, it turned out to be, you know, a huge success for, you know, building, you know, my foundation.
And how does it feel to be Coach George?
It feels good. I mean, anytime for me, the chance to give back to kids and, you know, really be hands-on with the kids, I mean, it was like I was a kid out there playing with those guys.
And what kind of players do you expect to have there this time around?
Last year we had you know, some pretty skilled kids.
Okay.
There was a lot of kids that, you know, was teaching me moves, so it was pretty impressive. Those little guys had moves like that.
And did you teach them some of your dunks?
Yeah, we lowered the court down a little bit, and you know, we've seen a little bit of athleticism from the babies.
And who do you have scheduled to appear? Any of your Pacer teammates?
Yeah, you know, I ain't gonna give out too many names, but you know, we'll have Danny Granger show up, and
okay,
you know, a couple of more guys come in.
Definitely, definitely. And where can we find information about this upcoming skills camp?
You can go to my website. It's pgskillscamp2012.com.
Okay. Fans, make sure you check it out. Go to make sure you go to pgskillscamp2012.com and support some of the great things Paul George has going on. I know you have a Twitter page. Where can fans follow you on Twitter?
Follow me at King24George.
Follow him there, fans, and support. Again, he said some great things on Twitter. I mean, I was looking at your Twitter feed today. You got some great things. You interact with the fans, and fans, make sure you check him out. He'll interact with you.
Definitely.
And, Paul, one more time, your skills camp. Make sure, please, go to pgskillscamp2012.com. Support some of the great things Paul George has going on. And Paul, real quickly before we get out of here, you were in the slam dunk contest last season. Will we see you again?
I don't know. I mean, I had fun with it. I don't know. I might have to. I think I retired from it, you know, after I took that loss. But I don't know. I might come out of retirement and redeem myself.
Okay. And one thing about the slam dunk contest I've noticed over the years, I mean, people are doing some crazy, crazy things. And sometimes I'm thinking somebody's going to get hurt one of these years. I mean, do you feel that way?
Yeah, I mean, it's so tough. So many dunks that have been done before and have been seen before. So, but you really try to, you know, use your imagination, and, you know, that calls for trying to jump over big obstacles and stuff like that. So, know, we definitely got to be, you know, careful with the props we use.
Right. And maybe with your Pacer teammate, Gerald Green, maybe you guys can have some dunk contests in practice.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be a lot of videos on YouTube coming up, you know, as soon as training camp starts.
Paul, it was a pleasure talking to you, man. We wish you nothing but the best of luck with your skills camp and nothing but the best of luck going into next season. And let's do it again, man.
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Take care.
All right.
Paul George, Indiana Pacers. And Paul George is a very talented player. I mean, this is a guy who's can do a lot of things. He can defend like no other. He's improved from downtown. He's got athleticism. He can jump out of the building. He can do a lot. And this Pacer team, a team with Roy Hibbert that helped, that helps that ball club. And that helped them against the Miami Heat. I mean, they had the 2-1 lead, and ultimately LeBron James was LeBron James, and Dwayne Wade was Dwayne Wade, and those guys came in and did what they had to do. But give the Pacers a lot of credit. A very good ball club, and a team on the rise, a young team, and it has a lot of pieces. David West, I mean, you have Paul George, of course, a guy who I think is going to get better. George Hill, the guy they brought in from the Spurs last season. Of course, you have Granger, you have Hibbert, you bring in a Gerald Green, a guy who did some work with the New Jersey / Brooklyn Nets now last season. I mean, he did some work for the Nets. And so you got some pieces there. You bring in the DJ Augustine, a guy who I like, and I think is a good pickup for this ball club. You definitely like that. And you got Hansbrough. And you got so you got some talent here. You definitely have some talent with the Pacers. Already better than the Celtics, already better than the Bulls, already better than the Heat. I don't know. I mean, you're already in that class. I don't know if you can say they are in that class at this point. But, hey, this is a team with talent. And if Paul George can take that next step, this team becomes better. Roy Hibbert, if he continues to get better, he was an all-star a year ago, they get better. I mean, so this is a talented team. Don't sleep on the Indiana Pacers, Paul George, and the rest of those boys. And again, make sure you go to his website, pgskillscamp2012.com. It was a pleasure talking to another PG, Paul George, PG, Paul Gant, and, you know, the PGs. It was the PG time in the city, everybody. It was a pleasure talking to Paul George. And I want to go back now to the Dream Team, or this version of the Dream Team. I really shouldn't call him a Dream Team. I shouldn't call him a Dream Team. I'm going to stop doing that. This basketball team, United States basketball team, I mean, they came out and they put it on Nigeria. They put it on Nigeria. Put it on those boys. And if there ever was a time for a mercy rule to be in effect, this is the time. I mean, there should have been some kind of mercy put on that Nigeria team. I mean, you obviously cannot compete with this team. Mike Diagu is the only guy with NBA experience on that team. And he had 27 points for that ball club, for the Nigerian ball club. But Nigeria, I mean, they are Nigeria. I mean, it is what it is. And Ike Diagu, he said it best. When they shoot like this, I don't know if there's any team that can beat them. And they shot the ball like it was nothing from downtown. A record 26 three-pointers made. 26 three-pointers made. 26 for 59 from downtown. And granted, that line is a little it's easier to shoot from the international line than the NBA line. It's in a little more. And you remember that year, I believe it was 97, after the 96 Olympics, where they went to the international line, and everybody was shooting threes. And the biggest thing I remember from that year was the game against the Knicks and the Heat, and that was 97. You know, all those battles they had in the 90s. But anyway, Alonzo Mourning hit a three, and you're saying, I mean, and everybody was shooting threes that particular year, 1997. Everybody was shooting threes. I mean, I could have went out there and shot threes. I mean, everybody was shooting threes back in 1997, and with the international line. The three-point shot is a weapon. And the three-point shot is a weapon anyway, but it becomes more so a weapon in international play and in a college game because of where the line is. And Carmelo Anthony, he was a beast, 37 big points. And is there more of a pure scorer than Carmelo Anthony? I mean, Kevin Durant is up there, but Melo can do it in so many different ways. He is just so pure as a scorer in this league. And just, I mean, he goes, does his thing on all types of levels, and obviously the 37 big points, including 10 for 12 from downtown. Had 10 three-pointers. Melo, I mean, when Melo's hot, he's a tough guy to stop. Darn near unstoppable when Melo's hot. And everybody jumped into the act. Everybody was shooting threes and having a good old time. And the route was on. The route was on. And it was on and popping early in this particular game for the United States team. I mean, a margin of victory of 83 points. Take that, 1992 Dream Team. Your margin of victory, the biggest margin of victory for you was 68. This team beat Nigeria by 83. So maybe this team can beat the original Dream Team. Nah, no way. Malone, Barkley, prime Malone, prime Barkley, prime Ewing, prime David Robinson, please. Prime Michael Jordan, a prime Scottie Pippen, a lockdown defender, and Scottie Pippen. Chris Mullin, a sniper. I mean, please. Please, please, please. But it would be a good game. It definitely would be a good game. But I look at it now, and I look at this version of the Dream Team, if you will. And I keep calling them that, but they're not that. They're not a Dream Team. I said Ike Diago was the only one for Nigeria. They also had Al-Farouq Aminu. They also had him, who plays for the New Orleans Hornets. But it doesn't matter. I mean, yeah, you had two NBA players, but two marginal NBA players. And so it really wasn't close. And the only team that really I think is Brazil, their older team, not Brazil, Argentina, the team that gave them fits, is an older team. They're an older team. They gave U.S. a big game years ago, 4 years ago. They're a different team now. They're older. Their key guys are older. But you look at Spain, and that's the team. With the bigs that they have, Ibaka, the Gasol brothers, and Marc Gasol didn't play in the game they played last time, the exhibition game. But those Gasol brothers, having those guys is going to give this team a problem, especially because of the lack of size that this team has, this U.S. team has. I mean, Tyson Chandler, really, you got Tyson Chandler, Kevin Love, and that's about it. Anthony Davis as well, but again, you got a beefy guy in Marc Gasol. Marc Gasol is a beast down low. Pau Gasol is one of the better guys, better players in this league, better big men in this league, I should say. And then you have their guards, Calderon. So, I mean, and imagine if they had Ricky Rubio, how much that would help the Spain team. But that's the only team I believe that's really going to give the U.S. a run for their money. Argentina may play them tough, but, again, that's not really going to matter too much. They'll play them tough, but they're not going to beat them. Brazil may play them tough, but they're not going to beat them. That's the only team that can beat them. And really, I don't think they can beat. The only team that can beat this ball club really is themselves. They're that talented. They're that good. The only team that can beat them is themselves. And unless they beat themselves, they're not going to lose. Unless they beat themselves, they're not going to lose. They're not. So we can kind of get that out of the way. They're not going to lose. They're not. They're just not. They're too good. They're just too good. And they play today. Their next game, the U.S. team, is Saturday against Lithuania. And then they play again on Monday. And they play Argentina. And that's going to be a tough one. The Argentina team, a little older, though. But, again, it's going to be a tough team to play and beat. And then a quarterfinal start on Wednesday, August 8th. And then, of course, you have the semis that Friday and then the finals that Sunday. And you expect the U.S. team to be in the finals. There's no way they'll lose. There's no way they're not going to be in the finals. There's no way they're going to lose. I mean, the chances that of them winning is the chances of me growing a full head of hair. And if you don't know, I'm bald. I'm losing my hair. So that's not possible. And I'm saying all that to say it's not possible. Not possible. And I want to move now, and we're in the Olympics right now. The Olympics are going on. People are loving them. Some people are complaining because they're not live. And, of course, we all know the results before they actually happen. But this has been going on forever. But this is typical with the Olympics because of scheduling conflicts. Not scheduling conflicts, because of where the Olympics take place. I mean, it's going to be impossible to see these things live. And you're NBC. You pay billions of dollars to broadcast the Olympics. You want that stuff in prime time. I mean, for example, you got the young girl, Gabby. Everybody's talking about her. She got it done today, winning the individual in gymnastics. She wanted the individual performance in gymnastics. And, I mean, she has the all-around title. That's Gabby. Gabby Douglas wins the all-around title. And I believe that took place around this afternoon. And I'm speaking Eastern time, but that took place live this afternoon. So how many people would have been able to see it this afternoon? A lot of people most people are working, so a lot of people would have had to have taped it, DVR, that particular event. It's better for NBC to have that event prime time, so everybody can see. And you look at Gabby Douglas, she's going to make a whole heck of a lot of money with endorsements. She seems to have a big-time personality. She has a big-time smile that draws you in. She seems to be an all-around sweet girl, and she's going to cash in. She's going to cash in, and some people believe she's going to be the biggest star in gymnastics since Mary Lou Retton back in 1994. So she's going to be making a lot of money. She's going to be making a lot of money. And this is the third straight American to win the all-around gymnastics title. So she got it done. She got it done. She got it done. And a lot of people were very integral in her success. Her mom did a lot for her to be successful. I mean, and it's a big commitment that these young kids make at such an age. She's only 16. They make a big-time commitment. I mean, they are in tremendous shape, and I'm sure there are times where, you know, in terms of a diet, she has to watch that. She has to be – you want to be around a certain weight. You want to keep yourself fit, trim, and what have you. And so you know that she's going to try to do everything in her power to make sure – she's going to work hard. It's a lot of hard work to be a gold medal winner in the Olympics. And this happens every 4 years. And you imagine the amount of work that goes into it the amount of work, training, and what have you to get to this position. And the Olympics happen every 4 years, once every 4 years. And so it's an amazing sacrifice that not only these athletes make, but for some of these athletes, their parents, and even the spouses of some of these athletes make to get to this position. Gabby Douglas is going to make herself a lot of money. She's going to make herself a whole heck of a lot of money. And I hope she cashes in. I hope she cashes in big time. I mean, I hope she really takes advantage of this opportunity and makes a whole heck of a lot of money. You want her to make a whole heck of a lot of money. And I think it also helps for her that she's African-American. I mean, this is not a sport that African-Americans have dominated. So I think that helps. I mean, that helps. I mean, she's the first to do it. The first to win the all-around. And this is gymnastics' biggest prize. And she's the first African-American woman to do it. The first African-American to win the all-around. So, I mean, that's big. That, to me, equals a lot of money. That equals a lot of money. Madison Avenue is going to love Gabby Douglas. That smile will light up a TV set. That will light up a TV set. Madison Avenue is going to love her. The last half hour, go for it. Starts right now. Last half hour of Go For It. First hour, we were joined by Paul George of the Indiana Pacers. And again, he has a skills camp coming up August 7th through the 9th, Sun Valley, California. Go to his website, pgskillscamp2012.com. Support some of the things he has going on. He's doing big-time work in the community and doing some big-time work on the court. And this last half hour, I want to start, and we talked about it, Gabby Douglas, she wins the gold medal in the all-around. Madison Avenue is going to love her. She just hit the jackpot. People, she's going to make some money. You're going to see her everywhere. And I hope, I hope she cashes in big time. And while she's cashing in, I hope she can slide me a couple dollars. I mean, I wouldn't mind a couple dollars for supporting her and some of the great things she is doing in the world of gymnastics. I mean, I wouldn't mind a couple dollars. I really wouldn't. I don't think I'll get it, but I wouldn't mind it. But anyway, you know, Gabby Douglas, she's a star. She is a star. Michael Phelps, he's doing his thing. He's a star. I mean, he's a star as well. And you look at, we're talking about the Olympics now, and there's a little scandal in badminton. Apparently some players, cheating. Not necessarily cheating, but losing on purpose to get a better match, to get a better draw. And they were sent home. And I say, you know what, that happens all the time in the world of sports. That's nothing new under the sun. I mean, teams have done that in various sports to get various players. I mean, some teams will lose some of their games so they can get the number one pick. I mean, it happens. This is something that happens in sports. I understand it's the Olympics, and I understand all that, but you know what? I think what happened was they weren't really doing a good job of selling it. They didn't really sell it too well, and because they didn't sell it too well, it looked too obvious, and people caught on. People caught on. Fans were booing at the events. I mean, if you're going to lose on purpose, you got to sell it a little better. I mean, teams do it all the time, but you got to sell it a little better. So just sell it a little better. I mean, because this is nothing new in the world of sports. This happens. Teams lose games to get favorable matchups. This happens. This is nothing new. This is nothing new. My Sixers did it, in some respect, to avoid the Miami Heat in the first round. This is nothing new. This is nothing new. I don't know why this is really such a big deal. This happens in sports. This is sports. It happens in sports. We all try to get favorable matchups. Even in life, we try to get favorable situations. We all do it. And we all fake sometimes to get favorable situations. I know a lot of men who fake to get favorable situations. I love you. I love you, baby. You don't love that woman. You just want to get in her pants. So you lied, and you played it off to get a favorable situation. I mean, these things happen in life. These things happen in the world of sports. This is nothing new. This is nothing new. This is nothing new. People do it all the time. People do it all the time. People do it all the time. I mean, this is nothing new. I don't know why we're acting shocked, amazed, surprised. We're not. This is not surprising. This is not surprising. I mean, we all do it to get favorable matchups. We all try to lose sometimes to get favorable situations. We do it all the time in life. We manipulate to get favorable situations. I think what happened was they didn't really do a good job of acting. And I guess it's safe to say they need to stick to badminton and not to acting, because they didn't act too well. Just stick to badminton. And don't. You're not actors. And obviously you couldn't act. You couldn't sell this better. You didn't do a good job of selling this. You got to sell it a little better. I mean, team sucked for Andrew Luck last season. It continued to suck. I mean, and that's why with the NBA, that's why you have the lottery system where, you know, granted the team with the worst record has the best opportunity, the best chance to get the number one pick, but teams have opportunities. Other teams have opportunities to get the number one pick. I mean, teams do have opportunities. New Orleans Hornets weren't the worst team with the worst record in the league, and they got the number one pick. They got the prize of Anthony Davis. They got the prize. They got the prize. But this is not uncommon. This is not uncommon. This is not uncommon. So as far as I'm concerned, who cares? It's not a big deal. It's badminton, for crying out loud. It's badminton. No disrespect to badminton players around the world and around the country, but this is badminton. You know, this is badminton. This is badminton. That's what it is. Badminton. Nothing more, nothing less. No disrespect again to badminton players around the world, but it is what it is. It is what it is. It's badminton. It is what it is. It is what it is. But, you know, I guess a lot of people are making a big deal about it. A lot of people in the Olympics, I should say. But again, it's only badminton, everybody. It's only badminton. And in other news, other fun and big-time news, let's bring the crowd in for this one. Do you know what tomorrow is? Do you know what tomorrow is? Do you know what's happening tomorrow? He's back! Floyd Mayweather Jr., everybody, will be released from prison tomorrow. He's out. He's back. Floyd Mayweather Jr., 2 months in prison. He's back. He's out of the joint. And hopefully he's back to fighting again, getting back in the ring and making that money and doing big things. He's back. He's back. Woo! Floyd Mayweather, out of jail. Fresh out of jail, Floyd Mayweather, tomorrow. Spent 2 months in prison, one in June 1st. Gets out tomorrow. 2 months in prison. That's too much, 2 months too many. That's a lot of time in prison for Money May, for anybody, but it is what it is. You do the crime, you do the time. And Floyd Mayweather, he's out and about. He is out and about, everybody. So the question becomes, what happens with Floyd? Does he fight again this year? That was his intention. He had every intention of fighting. He had every intention of fighting. this particular year. He said he was going to do it. We'll see what happens. I know he was having problems in terms of he was trying to get out early. Talked about there's a possibility. I know he had some doctors to vouch for him that there's a possibility that he his career was in jeopardy. He wasn't getting the proper nutrients. He wasn't able to work out the necessary amount of times and frequency in terms of hours and days because of his situation, because he was away from everyone else, because of his celebrity. I mean, so we'll see what Floyd Mayweather looks like. We'll see what his fitness is after spending 2 months in prison. And we'll see if he's able to come back this year. I don't think he'll be fighting Pacquiao that by the end of this year. So anybody that's thinking of that matchup, I don't think it happens in 2012. Hopefully it happens in 2013, but don't hold your breath, please, because you might just end up dying. But anyway, Manny Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather, I think if you want to see that match, I think you're going to have to play a video game or you're going to have to lay down one night and hope to have a dream about it. Because in some respect, that may be the only way it's going to happen, in your dreams. You might have to have a dream about this fight if you want to see it. This might be something you're going to have to deal with in your dreams and listen and watch in your dreams, because it's not really going to be, you're not going to be able to see it. It may not happen. And hopefully we'll all live long enough to see it. I mean, come on, tomorrow's not promised. I mean, but this fight is, I mean, these guys are getting older now, and at some point you don't want to see when these guys are 38 and 39 years old. You want to see when these guys are close to their prime. And right now they're still fairly pretty much in their primes. I mean, you can see Floyd and Pacquiao may have slowed down, maybe a smidget. But these guys are still prime, still pound-for-pound best in the sport of boxing. So you want to see those guys get it on before it's too late, before they're old and gray, and it won't even matter. I mean, like Tyson and Holyfield many years ago. I mean, they were supposed to get it on in the early 90s. Tyson goes to jail, and they end up getting it on after, you know, back in 96, I believe it was, their first fight. And again, I mean, both of those guys really weren't in their prime at the time. But, I mean, it happened, but you wanted to see that happen when both of these guys were in their primes. You wanted to see them see it happen when they were prime fighters. That's when you wanted to see that fight, when they were in their primes, when they were prime-time fighters. That's when you wanted to see it. But anyway, he's out, everybody. He's out tomorrow. He's out. Floyd Mayweather is released and hopefully get himself right and never have to return to prison again. I want to move now to baseball, and I want to move to Steven Strasburg, the phenom for the Washington Nationals, phenom pitcher, Davey Johnson. Talked about an innings limit for Steven Strasburg. It's been widely known and talked about that the Nationals had put a 160-inning limit on Steven Strasburg, who's coming back from Tommy John surgery on his elbow. And they want to, and to me, it's something that they should definitely think about. Granted, they're only 2.5 games up on the Atlanta Braves, but this is a guy that's going to anchor your staff for the next, hopefully, 5 to 10 years for the Washington Nationals. I think it would be in the best interest to limit his innings. You want to limit his innings, but you wonder what's going to happen if they get into the playoffs and Steven Strasburg is at or near that limit. You wonder how they will handle that. And if you're Strasburg, you're a competitor. You're not going to let anybody just take the ball out of your hands. You're a competitor. You want to compete. You want to compete at the highest of levels, and you want to get it done. You're not going to let anybody, just anybody, take the ball out of your hands. You're just not. You're just not. So you wonder how this whole thing is going to play out. He's at 121 innings now, 21 starts thus far for Steven Strasburg. 21 starts. So if I'm the Nationals, I got to think about it. I definitely have to think about limiting his starts and maybe possibly skipping starts at this point. You got to. I mean, you played to this point 104 games. You got 58 games left. You figure he's going to start every fifth day. So 5 times 58, you're talking 5 times 58, 1, 5, 0. You're talking about maybe 12 to 13 starts left for Stroudsburg, 12 starts and 12 more starts possibly for him every fifth day. I think you're going to have to skip starts. I mean, I don't see how you could not if the limit is truly 160 and you're about sticking to that limit of 160. I just don't see how you cannot limit his starts. You're going to really have to. I don't think you have a choice in the matter if you're the Washington Nationals, if you believe and concerned about the amount of innings he's going to pitch. I think you got to start skipping starts. That's what you're going to have to do if you're the Washington Nationals. And it's difficult because you are in a pennant race. You are in a pennant race, and the reality of sports is you never know when you're going to have another opportunity to be in a pennant race. I mean, that's just the name of the game in terms of sports. I mean, you don't know what can happen in terms of injuries year to year. I mean, things happen. Stuff happens. And so it's a tough situation because you never know when you're going to be in that position again to compete. And the Nationals, a good young ball club, a young nucleus, the Bryce Harpers, the Zimmermans, I mean, the Stroudsburgs. I mean, a lot of big-time players on this ball club, young players, who you expect to really anchor this ball club moving forward. You expect some of the guys that I mentioned to anchor this team moving forward, and one of the guys that's going to anchor that pitching staff is Steven Strasburg. He's going to be one of the guys that's going to anchor that pitching staff moving forward. He's going to be that guy to anchor that pitching staff moving forward for you. So, if you're the Washington Nationals, you got to be smart. You definitely have to be smart in terms of how you handle this guy. You definitely want to be smart. You don't want to mess him up too much in terms of rhythm when you're skipping those starts, but you got to be smart. You have to be smart with Steven Strasburg. Ease his way back. I mean, right now he's at 121 innings. You figure if he goes, if we're estimating at 51 games, 59 games left for the Nationals, and with those 59 games left, you're just estimating how many starts is probably going to be every fifth day. So you're estimating close to 11 to 12 starts, maybe 10 starts, 10 more starts for this guy. And if he averages 10, 11 starts, let's say he averages 5 innings per start. That's 55 innings. That's 170 innings. And that blows away that 160-inning limit. So, the Nationals have a decision to make, how they're going to figure this thing out and what they're going to do. But it's obvious when you have a phenom like Steven Strasburg and a guy that you have, pretty much a guy that's going to usher in, who's going to be one of the leaders of your franchise, one of the ace of your staff for the next 5 to 10 years, you have to be smart. You truly have to be smart in what you do. You have to be smart. And so hopefully, the Nationals can work this out with Steven Strasburg. They're going to have a tough decision to make. They truly are going to have a tough decision to make how they handle this situation. You really do. They really have a tough thing. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to figure this thing out. But, hey, that's not my problem. That's the problem of Davey Johnson and the Nationals organization. And I want to go back to football now. And Phil Simms, interesting comments about Eli Manning, 2-time Super Bowl winning. Eli Manning, 2-time NFL, not NFL, but 2-time Super Bowl MVP and 2-time Super Bowl winning quarterback Eli Manning. Phil Simms believes at this point, Eli Manning is a Hall of Fame quarterback. And let's read his quotes. Here we are 5 years ago before the Giants won their first Super Bowl, and all the talk that year was maybe the Giants need to bring in another quarterback in and Tom Coughlin's in troubles. Now they're both absolutely one day will go in the Hall of Fame. So he believes now they both will go into the Hall of Fame, and Phil Simms told this to the USA Today. I mean, two Super Bowl rings for Eli Manning. I mean, the way he's won those Super Bowls, they went on the road both times in the Super Bowl to get to that point. I mean, Eli won in Green Bay, won in San Francisco. Each time he got to the Super Bowl, he went on the road in Green Bay, in San Francisco, and got it done. So, I mean, is Eli a Hall of Famer at this point? I'd say no, but he's not far off. He's not far off. He's close, actually. He's very close. I think you can make an argument that with the numbers in the NFL now, and being that this is a passing league, I think he will have the numbers. I think he will have the numbers to get in. I think he'll have the numbers, and I think he already has the rings. He has two Super Bowl rings. I think he has the rings now. I mean, he was a big reason why those two Giants teams in 2007 and this past year, he was the reason why, one of the big reasons why, that the Giants went and won those two Super Bowls. He's a big reason why. He's made big plays in those Super Bowls against the Patriots both times. He's made big plays. The big play to David Tyree, give Tyree a lot of credit on that particular play. But give Eli a lot of credit, too, because he broke the tackle of Jarvis Green and those boys from the Patriots, and he was able to stay alive and keep the play alive and was able to get it down to Tyree. So give him credit in that particular situation, and give him credit. Beautiful pass on the sideline to Mario Manningham. Great catch by Mario Manningham, but also a heck of a pass by Eli Manning. So, give him a lot of credit. Give him a lot of credit. Eli Manning was the big reason that the Giants won the Super Bowl. And again, this is a passing league now. They're passing the ball more often than not in the National Football League. They're using the pass to set up the run. Before it was using the run to set up the pass, it has switched. It has flip-flopped. And a lot of teams are just using the run just to keep you honest. But as far as I'm concerned, this is a pass-happy league. So with that being said, Eli is going to have the necessary numbers to get him into the Hall of Fame. Is he a Hall of Famer right now? If the career ended today, would he be a Hall of Famer? That's tough. That's tough. I mean, because I think you can make legitimate arguments either way. I think you can make a legitimate argument either way. But I think I'm almost saying he needs a couple more years of just to get the necessary. Well, numbers wise, like I said, he's going to have the numbers, and he already has the rings. I think and thinking about this whole situation now, and thinking about it out loud, Eli Manning probably is a Hall of Fame quarterback if his career ended today. He probably is a Hall of Fame quarterback. I mean, he got the two rings, and he was the biggest reason why they got the two rings. I mean, the fourth quarter comebacks this season. I mean, Eli was super this year. He was off the charts. He was off the charts. At this point, 185 touchdowns, 129 interceptions. You like to see those touchdowns go over the 200 mark, and that's going to happen. If he's not a Hall of Famer, he's darn near close. How about that? If he's not a Hall of Famer, he's just about there. He's not far off. Not far off at all. And I think when it's all said and done, he will be Canton bound. Him and his brother, Peyton, two quarterbacks will both be in the Hall of Fame. And that should be an exciting time for the Manning brothers when it happens. Peyton's probably going to get in before Eli because I believe Peyton's career will end before Eli. Peyton's a first ballot Hall of Famer. I don't think at this point Eli is a first ballot Hall of Famer. But he's going to get there. And we'll see what Peyton does in the second half of his career now. I mean, another opportunity. And you expect big numbers for Peyton Manning. I think he has so much to prove this year. I mean, I think the Colts had to do what they had to do. They had an opportunity to get what many believe is the best quarterback prospect since John Elway. I mean, in terms of grades and everything. They had the opportunity to get him and Andrew Luck. When you have that opportunity, you almost had to do what they did. And especially the way that ball club was, you don't know how close they are to actually being a contending team. It really didn't make sense to keep Peyton Manning in that particular situation. But I still think Peyton Manning believes that some – there's people out here who believe that Peyton Manning – a lot of people are concerned, and rightfully so. What's going to happen when Peyton Manning takes that hit, that first big hit? What's going to happen? And that's going to be interesting. That's truly going to be interesting to see what happens there. But we'll see. We'll see. But I expect to figure out Peyton Manning. I think he has a lot to prove, and I think he's going to find a way to prove it to each and every one of his doubters that are out there. I can't doubt Peyton Manning right now. I have concerns, just like everybody else in terms of that neck. I mean, three surgeries on the neck is three surgeries on the neck. You know what I mean? There's no getting around that. But no one works as hard as Peyton Manning, and being that he just had twins and everything, would he risk going out there again? And who knows what the possibilities are, especially with a neck. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see what Peyton Manning has in store this season. And we'll see what the NFL as a whole has in store. And speaking of that, and we talked about the Hall of Fame. Speaking of the Hall of Fame, one of the favorite guys of this show, Willie Rofe, one of our favorites, he's getting inducted this weekend. We had Willie on last week, and we'll see if Willie cries. I mean, Willie says he's not going to cry. He doesn't want to cry in front of all those people on national TV, and he's going to do his darndest, his best, not to cry. But Willie Rofe will be going in this year. Many people believe he should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer, but he wasn't. He's going in this year. And now I'm going to be watching. I'm going to be in front of my TV watching it. I'm very interested to see if Willie will cry, if he will give in to his emotions, because this is an emotional time. I mean, it's an opportunity for him to be immortalized, and he will be immortalized this weekend. And like you said last week when he was on this show, generations of Rofes will be able to see Willie Rofe in Canton. They will be able to see his name, his face, with his bust in Canton, Ohio, for years and years to come. You will be able to see Willie Rofe in Canton, Ohio. And that's big. And that's big, and that's a big opportunity for Willie Rofe. And the opportunity is here. Not too many people can say they are one of the best to have ever done it in anything they do in life. And Willie Rofe can say that. He can truly say that. And you know, I'm happy for him. Again, he's been a key member, a key contributor to this show for the past 2 years. And we're happy for Willie. If we're really happy for this man, he has an opportunity now. The opportunity is upon him. It's going to happen this Saturday, and Willie Rofe will be forever immortalized and be known as one of the greatest offensive tackles to ever have played this game in the history of the National Football League, and that's a very, 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 very long time. I want to thank Paul George of the Indiana Pacers for stopping by. Make sure you check his website out for his upcoming skills camp, pgskillscamp2012.com. That's pgskillscamp2012.com. Check him out on Twitter also at King24George. You can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/began, where you can listen to this show and other great shows. We'll be back here on Saturday, so make sure you check us out then. Follow the show on Twitter at Go4 again. Again, you can listen to this show and other great shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgan, and make sure you follow the show on Twitter at Go4GAN. For everybody here at Go4, see you later. Take care. Have a great night. See you Saturday.